When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I am unwilling to give up, that I will start over from scratch as many times as it takes to get where I want to be.
You just want to make sure you will get knocked down, but just make sure you don't get knocked out.
So your only choice should be go focus on what you can control.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Kara Golden Show. Join me each week for inspiring conversations with some of the world's greatest leaders. We'll talk with founders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and really some of the most interesting people of our time. Can't wait to get started. Let's go. Hi, everyone. It's Kara Golden from The Kara Golden Show, and I'm so excited to have my next guest here. He is a return guest, I should mention. So we have Sean Nelson, who is the founder and CEO of the furniture manufacturer called Lovesac. And if you haven't bought a Lovesac yet, you definitely need to do that. But the key thing that we're going to talk about today is his brand new, incredible book called Let Me Save You 25 Years. And I don't know if it'll save you 25 years or if it will save you a lifetime, but definitely the title of this book says it all, as Sean knows from experience, having encountered many hidden or unanticipated difficulties along the way since he started his company Lovesac more than two decades ago. It's such a great read and definitely a very, very beautiful, almost coffee table book. It's really super nice. So I'm excited to have Sean back to talk a little bit more on the show about all of the different aspects of the book, including the great lessons that come along with it. So welcome, Sean. How are you?
So good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, super excited. So first, I'd love for you, for anybody who's not familiar with Lovesac, maybe you can just give sort of a background on the company.
Yeah, the quick version is, hence the title of the book, it's been a 25-year saga. We started as a giant, not beanbag company. We make these, you know, beanbags full of shredded foam that could fill the back of a truck. Made those in college as a side hustle. Got a big order, forced me to build a factory using farm equipment. Crazy stories there, some of which we unpacked on our first round on your podcast, and are unpacked deeply in the book. All kinds of gory details, photos to go with this stuff. You know, a hay buster, hay grinder, farm equipment used to shred foam, and wanting to keep going after completing that big order right out of college, opened our first retail store at a mall in Salt Lake City, Utah during the Winter Olympics there back in 2001. And it worked. And people, we ended up opening more stores all over the West. I ended up winning a reality TV show with Richard Branson on Fox, raised venture capital off of that, private equity, had to restart the company along the way. I mean, it's all the glorious details, the highs and the extreme lows. Full chapter 11, start over, everything are in this book. And finally kind of making it out in the last decade, we came public in 2018, making mostly Sactionals, these modular couches you could have the rest of your life. The company was doing 100 million then when we came public. And now this year, roughly 700 is where the analysts show us wrapping up the year that we're in, just completing right now. And so it's been a wild ride from my parents' basement to, you know, $1 billion in valuation at different times, depending on the stock market. And now we're still going and have lots in store for the future.
That's wild. So you wrote this incredible book called Let Me Save You 25 Years. Why now? What was it that you said, I got to go write a book?
Well, as the stories unfolded, just more and more fantastic things have happened. Crazy. So the subtitle is Mistakes, Miracles, and Lessons from the Lovesac Story. And there have been all of those endless sort of crazy events that you couldn't dream up happening along the way. You know, every time I've ever wanted to quit, there's been reasons that I couldn't, you know, miracles happening that have allowed me to kind of keep going or convince me to kind of keep going through all the craziest, hardest times. And waking up, celebrating our 25th anniversary last year, realized, oh my gosh, if I'm ever going to put this out there, now's the time. So we did it in tandem with that. It's just come out. And, you know, double entendre, right? It's a quick, short story. You could read it in like an hour. But I wanted to do something different. I read all the business books and I wanted to put something out there that was very different. So as you see, it's loaded with just gritty images. You know, this began before we all had a phone in our pocket, this story. So they are not pretty, but they're real. And I tried to share the real story with the real images, full bleed. You know, it's more like a coffee table book, as you said. And it's basically one chapter is a story, and the chapter following kind of is the lesson that comes along with it, and these 25 little Seanisms, you know, lessons I learned the hard way, and perhaps might not save you 25, but it might save you a decade. I think I could have saved a decade. I think I could have gotten to where I am now in business a decade earlier, you know, as they say, if I had only known then what I know now, and just trying to share that out.
How often have you thought about learning a new language only to be stopped by that memory of yours from the last time you tried to learn a language when it didn't go so well? Okay, maybe it wasn't a language that you were interested in learning, or perhaps all those poorly written textbooks in your sixth grade class weren't that well written after all. I have a great tip for you. It's called Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program around, available on desktop or app. No matter where you choose to learn it or what platform you choose to learn on, Rosetta Stone works, and it truly immerses you in the language you choose to learn, quicker and easier than you ever imagined to. Maybe you're getting ready to travel abroad this summer and you want to learn a bit of Portuguese, let's say, before your trip. Rosetta Stone can help. I know this firsthand as I did just this before traveling to Portugal last year. I learned Portuguese through Rosetta Stone, and by doing so, I not only got a better grasp of the spoken language of Portugal, but it got me very excited for the trip itself before I went. They even have a true accent feature that gives you feedback on your pronunciation as you are learning too. They've got you covered. Rosetta Stone's trusted experts are the real deal. They've been helping people just like you for over 30 years. Helping millions of people to learn Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and my favorite, Portuguese. The lessons are 5 to 10 minutes long and include practical exercises so that you can pick up the language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. No English translations either, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language you are focused on, helping you get the long-term retention you are looking for. And who wouldn't want that? Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, the Kara Golden Show listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today. In today's world, which I will admit can at times seem filled with too much of the wrong information, it's essential to find a good source that truly gets to the heart of what I want to know. I am super excited about our next sponsor, as I've been a big fan of their content for some time now. That sponsor is The Washington Post. Their depth on topics from business to tech isn't just impressive, it's essential reading for me. Whether I'm catching up on the latest tech trends or understanding how the day's news truly impacts my family, The Washington Post is my trusted source. Let's talk specifics. Their business and tech coverage, absolutely top-notch. Just imagine having the most insightful articles at your fingertips, including the unparalleled AI reporting from Drew Harwell, or the pulse on tech and online culture from Taylor Lorenz. And the best part? You can listen to articles just like you listen to this podcast, making it perfect for your busy lifestyle. I was just reading an article from one of my favorite Washington Post writers, Frances Stead Sellers. She covers entrepreneurs like myself, but also covers other interesting topics, including health, as well as some very interesting books. I also love getting their For You newsletter, which is their roundup of stories tailored just for my interests, right in my inbox every evening. The Washington Post app is super well done, I think. It makes it incredibly easy to stay up to date and follow my favorite journalists on the go. And if you ever thought that the Washington Post is just about politics, think again. They cover everything under the sun, from climate and culture to crosswords and cooking, providing a world of surprising stories and vital insights. Okay, enough of the love fest that I have for the Washington Post. Here's the deal. Being a listener of the Kara Golden Show has its benefits, and this one is too good to miss. Now is the time to sign up for the Washington Post. Go to washingtonpost.com/Kara Golden to subscribe for just 50 cents per week for your first year. That's 80% off their typical offer, so this is truly a steal. Once again, that's washingtonpost.com/Kara Golden to subscribe for just 50 cents per week for your first year.
When you think of one of your earliest, hardest lessons, maybe you said, okay, this is where it's all going to hell in a handbasket. Can you think about that? Like, what was one of the craziest stories that maybe you told your buddies or, you know, told your kids about? I mean, we certainly in Growing Hints have many, many stories along the way that we still, you know, and sometimes we're even thinking about things that we hadn't even talked about in years, right? But yeah. What was one of the earliest crazy stories that you learned that now you look back on that, I don't know, maybe kind of got in the way of you actually being able to grow in some way?
Well, a good example, one of the stories I unpack in the book is we were a bunch of kids trying to make this thing work. And hats off to us, like the first Seanism in the book, right? Chapter one, first lesson, just do something. And I did. I got off the couch, made a big beanbag. But that hurtled us down this path where eventually we got this giant order. We had to complete by Christmas for this big client. I had taken their money. I had spent their money on a deposit. I had to make this work or it was going to ruin me. And I was in the factory that we had built using farm equipment, getting the pallets, the first pallets ready to load on a full-size semi-truck using a forklift, you know, front to back loaded with small shrunken down sacks that we had shredded using this farm equipment. It was, everything about it was ridiculous. And the only reason farm equipment is because we couldn't afford, you know, a proper German shredder for $500,000. This, you know, it was a $250,000 order. We had to build the factory on credit cards. And I remember I'd ordered my first ever semi-truck. What do I know about a semi-truck? You know, it was a 13-foot-tall semi-truck. So we built 13-foot-tall pallets. And when the semi-truck backed up to the door to take the full first 2 weeks worth of shredded and shrunken sacks, boxed, palletized, shrink-wrapped, each pallet was like 5 feet too tall to fit in this truck. And I remember calling the trucking company, you know, screaming at them, like, what the heck? You guys sent me a short truck. They're like, I don't know. Let me find out. Like, what truck showed up? And the truth is, we were just too dumb as a bunch of 20 somethings to know that 13 feet meant 13 feet from the ground measuring up. And there's that space underneath the semi truck. So, in other words, the box itself is more like eight, nine feet. We didn't know what we didn't know. We couldn't have known it. And we could have, had I been humble enough and I guess smart enough to go really get someone involved who knew their stuff, but we were piecing it together. And I think, you know, so there's lots of lessons packed in this book about, you know, finding mentors, finding experts, listening to experts, not listening to experts, because there's a time for both. You know, one of the Seanisms, mind the experts. There's pros and cons to having experts tell you what you can and can't do. And all these lessons along the way that I try to marry these lessons with these stories to illustrate. And so, you know, the whole point of that story is we were just too dumb to even know and could have avoided those problems had we done some things differently and probably should have.
I loved that story because it's, maybe it's the saying, you know, fake it until you make it, right? Yeah. Especially when you're young, you just don't want to ask, right? And yet, how many of your friends were actually trying to hire, the same kind of people that you needed to do this, to sort of ask? And I mean, where would you have gone? I guess you could have figured it out, but it's just, it really truly is a, you think you know what you're doing. And I think it also speaks to, I remember reading that story in the book, it also speaks to, you know, it's kind of lonely at the top.
Yeah.
Right? Here you are, a young entrepreneur, and you're trying to show that you've got it all together, but you just don't want to show how vulnerable you really are. Right.
Yeah. And it's tricky because sometimes you're just moving so fast that, you know, you could stop to do the research or ask the questions or seek out the mentors. But at the same time, we were just trying to survive. And in a way, I don't regret it because obviously it got us here. But I do think, at the time, this podcast didn't exist. We were bootstrapping before the word bootstrapping had, I think, been invented. Like all of this modern culture over the last two decades of young entrepreneurship, you know, startup culture, hustle culture, none of that was a thing. This story began in 1995, technically. And so, and the story I just told happened around 2001. And so, you know, the arc, I think, of the 25 years has value in itself because today a would-be entrepreneur of any age has so much resource. They can listen to your podcast. They can listen to my podcast, also called Let Me Save You 25 Years, and where we go deep into every one of these Seanisms with guests like you. You were kind enough to come on and be my guest. And we unpack these things very deeply. And it's all free. Like all the proceeds from my book are donated to the FBLA. Like I'm not even taking any money from it. Same thing with the podcast. I've got no advertisers on my, like, I'm just trying to put it out there as you are, I know, Kara, in a lot of ways, because it's good for the world. It's obviously, and by the way, the meta opportunity of us connecting through this medium as entrepreneurs to help each other and network and do whatever, but there's so much now. And I didn't have that then. But it's only useful to you if you're taking advantage of it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. There's definitely places to find it for sure. And there weren't as many, absolutely. So you gained some recognition in the entrepreneurial world in the show Rebel Billionaire. And do I have the name correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the early 2000s, if you could sum up that experience, what would it be?
Look, traveling the world for 2 months with Richard Branson on his airline, landing in, I don't know, 11 different locations all around the globe and competing against, you know, people like Sarah Blakely, who was in the final with me, you know, founder of Spanx. It was a dream. It was unreal. It was hard to believe that that happened, but it did. And I won, and I won $1 million on TV. And I think, but even that, like there's lessons in that. Like at the time, Richard handed me this check on Fox Network for $1 million and everyone's dying. Cause at the time that was the biggest prize ever seen on TV. It was the first show shot all in high def and it was all over the world. It was a beautiful show. And I'm only thinking, oh my gosh, I have $2 million in debt. Like this isn't even gonna, you know, fix it. But you can't see that on TV. I'm not gonna say that on TV. And so you never really know the backstory. You know, we see so much, and entrepreneurship is glossy, and entrepreneurship is sexy. And you know, I've known since then a few billionaires and 100 millionaires, and there's a lot behind the gloss that you don't know and you can't know. And in the end, everybody's struggling in one way or another. If it's not with money or funding or whatever, it's just the grind of it, or their family's falling apart, or things that you can't see through the TV or through the video or, you know, behind the scenes. but I think it's universal. So I don't mean to take it all negative. It was a dream and it was amazing. And it got me started, The Rebel Billionaire with Richard Branson, but it did not fix everything and brought its own set of problems. You know, I remember, I experienced my 15 minutes of fame and people, one of the things, this is going to sound really weird and it's not in the book, but one of the things that people underestimate about fame, and I wasn't super famous, but locally I was in Utah. I was like a household name because I was like the local kid who won $1 million with Richard Branson on TV. People lose their empathy for you. You know, like now you're just a rich guy or you're a famous guy. And if you're not kind at every moment, at every turn, at every interaction, you're just a jerk or what have you. And I got to experience a little bit of that and realize like, oh, this is the price of being famous, so to speak, for just 1 minute, thankfully. Like I wouldn't want massive fame after all that. And so all kinds of lessons from all of these experiences. And that was the goal of the book, is just to kind of share some of those and be useful if I can.
And Richard has been a friend of yours for many, many years, from that experience too, which is just absolutely awesome. You and I talked about that I had a chance to go to Necker and it was just really, really amazing. So, highly recommend it to anybody who's listening. There's all kinds of entrepreneurial different trips that different people have put together that I highly recommend trying to get there. I think just the island in and of itself is absolutely gorgeous and really terrific, but it always seems like there's really interesting people that are there too. Every time I meet people and talk to people who have had an experience there, they tell me about different groups that have gone there too.
Yeah, it's almost like this mecca for entrepreneurship. And it's neat what Richard's done with his life and with his, I mean, that island, you know, he bought in 1978 for $120,000.
I know, it's insane. It blows my mind.
Yeah, and of course now, I mean, it's almost priceless, but it's neat to see that he didn't just turn it into only a bougie resort, but a place where people connect. And to this day, he's still there, you know, showing face and hosting. I was just there a few weeks ago, actually, on one of these with Liberty Ventures. And that's a cool one. There's lots of different ways that you can get to places, if not Necker, like Necker, to connect with people like Kara, you know, or me, or, you know, other like-minded individuals that you can learn, grow, and you know, benefit from being connected or just learn from. But you have to put yourself out there. And, you know, again, back to these Shaunisms, you know, that was the one that came from Necker Island, chapter 13, make your own luck. That was me and Richard laying on the roof of the Great House before it burned, the old Great House on Necker. And he was asking about what I believed, and I got into religion and I asked him and he said, well, I believe we make our own luck. And at first I write about this in the book. I didn't really buy into that because luck just seems so dismissive. But after a lot of bad luck and, you know, bad timing in life, collaborating to bring us down at different moments, you start believing in luck. I mean, if there's bad luck, there must be good luck too. And not just divine providence always. And so anyway, you know, I have a lot of feelings and thoughts about that, but Richard kind of inspired that Shaunism. And I think to this point, if you can't put yourself in places like that, where you can bump into people and make connections and see what comes of all that, how can you expect any luck? You know, if you're not out there creating
it. So true. It's so, so true. So I want to talk about that though for a second. So the finding your own luck, like let's say you're feeling like you start a company, nothing's going right. You know, obviously you have to sort of look at the overall business and the idea and all those things. But how do you put luck in your journey? If you're just feeling like it just things are just the world is against you. And obviously, yeah. I think any entrepreneur has days like that. But what would you say to that?
Yeah, I would say that's where my testimony of luck came from. Is from those feelings of the world is against me. Like, okay, so if there's bad luck, It's like, are you kidding me? Like, this happened and that, and it happens to be at this time when a check just cleared and we don't, you know, whatever. I don't know. Just the world conspiring against you. On the other hand, if that's true, then luck is in play. And I very much believe we experience these waves and these moments. But if we've not continued to push through, do the work, network, read the books, learn the things, meet the people, do the work on your hands and knees sometimes, you know, in my case, on a ladder, opening showrooms myself when we just didn't have the money to do it. And it just had to be my own sweat equity, my own grit. And then things happen. And in hindsight, usually you realize, oh, that was pretty lucky. But in the moment, it's just your life happening to you. And look, if you're religious, you can thank God. And look, I am. And I think that to some degree, it's all connected. I talk about this in the book. I'm pretty honest and open with it. You know, I don't think, as a believer, I don't think God created the universe as a magician. I think, you know, there are meteors hurtling all over the galaxy. And I think that the Big Bang the happenstance that maybe, you know, if you want to get scientific about it, create from the earth to even human relationships as we ricochet off of other people and things happen and unfold. And oh my gosh, who could have guessed that this meeting, this one person would lead to this other connection that led to my funding of my company or who knows what, is not so different than asteroids hurtling around the cosmos, colliding and combining elements in a way to create Earth. So I don't mean to get so esoteric, but I believe that we now make our own luck. And Richard kind of taught me that. And I believe that. And I think, but you have to be out there making it. And listen, sometimes it can be years. And that's the benefit of a story like mine. Look, I wish. I have friends who they're richer than me. They made more money than me. They did it in 2, 3, 4, 5 years, they've already on to their second, third, fourth, fifth guy. I'm still running the company I started in college. Yeah. But there's a benefit to that too. And by the way, I think I have a shot at building a Nike. I think I have a shot at building a brand that's here for 50 or 100 years. I really do. Now, whether that'll happen, we'll see. But I'm in the middle of it. It's not like my story's over at 25 years. It's just, this is just kind of where we're at. And it was a good moment to write the book. And so there's benefit to long stories. There's benefit to short stories. You're always comparing yourself. And usually, sadly, the media picks up on the really shiny ones, the really fast ones, the really hot ones. And then we think that's normal. And by the way, for every one of those, as we all know, the data, there's 10 more or 100 more that failed. So if you're lucky enough to even still be breathing, to be able to rub two nickels together and keep your thing going, whatever that thing is, you're already in the top 10%.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think it also speaks to, I always say, complacency will kill you. That I think that goes along with a lot of what you're saying too. It's like, you've got to keep moving and finding out, going out and trying new things. And I felt that way in your book too, that you didn't have all the answers. You were, you know, tripping, but you just kept getting back up. And I think like that is, we talk about resilience and tenacity and all of those things. And I think it's very rare that that an entrepreneur, maybe they're not going to do it the first time, but you know, the ones that actually show that they're not going down, right? They're going to keep getting back up again and keep moving. And I think that that's also what your story really lays out for people. And I also love the pictures too, because I'm a visual person. So that's really helpful. But in the book, you talk about the long-term entrepreneurial journey and the challenges that persist for you as revenue increases. What comes to mind when I say that to you?
Yeah, I mean, one of the stories I share in the book is I'm standing in front of my college class. I become a teacher in the master's program at Parsons School of Design, so top design school in the world. I'm teaching their master's program in New York City. Don't ask me how it all transpired. It was amazing. It was a cool experience, and I'm feeling like a total fraud because I'm presenting to them my framework. I call it the 12 W's framework. It's a strategic guide, which I think is a foolproof way to build like a strategic plan for a business. And I'm presenting it as the answer to so many things. And meanwhile, my business is falling apart and might be done in the next 30 days if I can't get this funding. And I'm thinking, how could my business possibly be as fragile at 70 million in revenues as it was at seven, or at, I don't know, $7,000 in revenue? Like, it just feels the same. It's, the numbers are much bigger and the consequences are higher. I've got four kids now, you know, like, oh my gosh, I'm still renting at the time. Like, I could be financially ruined. And yet here I am now at 700. How ironic is that? And I'm not saying it's as fragile necessarily, but the feelings are the same at the same time. Like, I've got to stay ahead of my competition. They're biting at my heels. I've got, you know, different patents that will expire. I've got to be innovating into other categories. And I've got now 1,500 employees that are counting on me to make good decisions so that it doesn't impact them in a market that's terrible for the furniture category right now in real time. Like, most of my competitors are down 20% for the last 2 years, year on year straight. Thankfully, Lovesac's grown a little bit, but we were growing at like 40% for almost a decade of that growth, and it's slowed down. And so, you know, it makes you nervous and it makes you thoughtful about what comes next. And thankfully, we have a bright future and we have a lot of great things coming, but I got to stay sharp. And so I think, like, no matter, and by the way, I believe, and I don't mean to speak for him, but I believe to some degree, Richard Branson, just to pick on him because we were talking about him, feels that way. You know, he's got all these different businesses. And by the way, he's had hundreds succeed and hundreds fail, literally, along the way. There's the mogul of moguls, and it just never ends. It just never ends. There's always something ebbing and flowing and working and not working, whether we're talking about one business or multiple businesses or just within one business. There are elements that are working and elements that are not. And so I don't know what to tell you. It's hard, but that's why they pay you. I harp on this. That's why they pay you the big bucks. You are the CEO of your own life. Decisions are tough. There's no right answer. And that's why CEOs are paid so much. Because it's flipping hard.
Yeah, definitely. So it's so crazy how our lives are the four kids and starting a company. And it's so crazy how there's so many similarities in totally. Your story, just a different industry.
Yeah.
So I love the chapter where you describe planning an exit strategy and then shifting to focus on continuing to build. So what lessons, I don't know, pivots or like what lessons can really be learned from that?
Yeah. Well, there are a few of the Seanisms I celebrate in the book. Embrace uncertainty. Mm-hmm. I think it's something I've never heard talked about much in entrepreneur circles. Occasionally I'll get a whiff of it, but I've thought a lot about what makes an entrepreneur an entrepreneur. And one of the key attributes that is vague and hard to put your finger on is the ability to embrace uncertainty, the ability to thrive in uncertainty. And I think those of us who are entrepreneurs take for granted this superpower because it's just how we live. Like we're just kind of like live with it, where uncertainty can break uncertainty can break normal people down into a pile of mush. Like they would sooner know the answer and take less pay, take a worse outcome, take, you know, whatever to get certain over just not knowing how this is going to work out, not knowing where it's going to go from here. And so if you get the sense, and look, it's hard on all of us, even those of us who have a stomach for it, but if you get the sense like you cannot deal with uncertainty, well, then maybe entrepreneurship is not for you. And that is not a criticism. If everyone were an entrepreneur, we would not have anybody working at Lovesac. Everyone would just be running around doing their own thing. And we need people of all kinds of different expertise to build things, to truly build things. And that's where I'm at now, is like, obviously we're past the startup phase. We're a public company traded on NASDAQ. It's been public for going on 6 years now. I'm proud of that. And it's rare to have a founder that's able to stick around. I'm proud of that. And we'll, you know, I hope that we can continue. But it means I have to be sharp. Like, you know, I'm no longer just like the owner of the company outright or that sort of thing. So and that's another thing that I unpack in the book is, so what's the answer to that? Well, be Michael Jordan. Like, nobody wanted Michael Jordan to leave the Bulls. He wasn't the owner of the team. He wasn't the coach of the team, but certainly nobody wanted him gone. And so how do you make yourself, how do you maintain control? Be awesome. Now, what's wrong with that? Are you afraid of being awesome? I mean, that's ownership, right? That's true ownership. And I boil that down another Seanism to, it's your fault. Like, have this attitude. Like, no matter where you are in an organization, you don't have to be the CEO. You whatever you happen to be in charge of, it's your fault. So I have all these little pithy phrases that I live by and that we unpack in depth on the book and on the podcast. Let me save you 25 years. But the lessons are endless, as you know, Kara. And by the way, after I finish these first 25 on the podcast, I'll go another 25 because the lessons are endless and they're the same. Like, you know the same things, Kara. And that's what's so fun about the podcast is I could have people like you on. And you don't need any prep. I could give you any one of these Seanisms. You've already learned the same things. I know that.
No, it's so true. And I think that that's where people learn. I mean, I go back to you're in YPO as well. I think it's this theory that just by hearing somebody else's story of how they've been through something versus actually solving somebody's problems for them, the former is the most helpful to people, right? That they can put it into their own framework, but being able to see that, hey, Sean's been through this. He's still standing. Mm-hmm. He still has his, you know, smile. He gets dressed every day, you know, he's
able to,
like, survive, right? And I think that's a really powerful thing for people to be able to see. And your stories definitely are you know, jaw-dropping, to say the least. And I think just being able to put it into a framework where people can learn from it is just really super helpful. So I've heard you say, as someone who is ambitious, being patient, or sometimes telling people to be patient feels really unambitious. Being forced to take it slow. I've learned great patience is a superpower and is your superpower. So I'd love to hear your take on patience and how does one become patient? I can't say that's my superpower still to this day. I'm forced to be patient, but I'm not happy about being patient.
Yeah, thank you. That's very astute. And it's the final Seanism in the book. Maintain top ambition with infinite patience. And I've learned so much of it is an attitude. Listen, no one would accuse me of being a patient person. My wife, my kid, no one probably. But I believe I am because I've been forced by life to become that, right? Like, it's taken me this long just to get my company here. And by the way, there's things that pop sooner and do this or happen faster, whatever. And so it's kind of been forced upon me, but I've learned that just because you can adopt an attitude of extreme patience, like it'll take as long as it takes, like put on that jacket for a minute. I will take as long as it takes. Like, you did this with your podcast, and now it's in the top 1% of all podcasts. I'm on the road. I'm only on episode 13, Kara. But this is the trick. So it goes along with grit. Are you able to maintain that attitude? Like, I will go as long as it takes. Where most people, they get 7 episodes in, a dozen, even 20 or even 100. And at the end, and by the way, maybe they should quit. I'm not saying you should just stick with everything, but if you can maintain top ambition, so if you're, and that's the trick too, it's not just patience. It's not just grit, but so what do you want? You want to be in the top of podcasts. Okay. Buckle up and don't lose sight of that. Now it's not enough just to keep going either. You have to do all the things. You have to navigate. You went and did 500 podcasts, other people's podcasts, to get the word out there on yours. Well, that didn't take less than a year. I mean, or two or three or four. Like, so it wasn't just that you could stick with a podcast. It's that your ambition didn't change. You want to be at the top. I do too. I want Love Sack to go on to become a Nike, to be a 50 or 100 year brand. Okay, how long is that going to take? I don't know. So I found through all this, it becomes quite motivating also to my own team when they get the sense, they don't get the sense from me ever. Like, oh, you know, maybe Sean will sell all his stock next year and be kind of done. And then it'll, you know, then Lovesac will be owned by Public Co and they'll recruit a new CEO. People are often terrified of that because you never know where a company goes. And usually it doesn't necessarily go great. Unless the founder's thinking around or screwing up, you know, it often doesn't go great from there. And so when my attitude is, not only will I do this now for as long as it takes. Now, whether or not that's true, who knows? Maybe a meteor comes along and someone buys the company for $1 trillion and, you know, they walk away with it and they don't even want me there. But my attitude has to be, I will go as long as it takes. And then that becomes contagious. And I'm able to say to my people, when sometimes they're like, oh, another year where we can't afford to hire for this or that. And I can put my arm around and be like, just be patient. And now I'm the one, usually the driver, the entrepreneur, the go-getter, the like, we can do everything. We can do anything. And now I'm the one, like the old guy in the room saying, just be patient. And yet we'll go another year without hiring for that because we can't afford to this year because it's a down year. It's a tough year. And when you have that attitude, by the way, it often unfolds that it's not so tough the year and you can hire for that and you get lucky. But your attitude has to be as long as it takes. And it's amazing how lucky you can get when that's your attitude and what a good culture that breeds, as opposed to like, am I just going to make this guy rich? Is he just looking for a chance to drop the mic and walk away? Because by the way, there's so much of that. There's so much wealth extraction out of companies that ruins companies because that's all that they're motivated by is just sucking the wealth out and the culture dies on the vine. And so I think the magic is when you can maintain top ambition with infinite patience.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. So, I mean, I think a lot of what you're talking about too is leadership, right? So it's being able to, you know, think back on some of those stories. I think with age, that's what I have always said to my team too. It's remembering the 2008, 2009 times, which weren't pretty for anybody versus, looking at COVID and everything going on during that time. I think if you're not old enough to be able to remember some of those really hard times where you had the patience and you had the curiosity to figure it out and get back up again and all of those different points that you point out in your chapters, I think it's just so key to be able to share those with people. And I think being able to lead from that perspective is also just absolutely key. So yeah,
and honesty, like I've tried hard with this book and with my podcast to be really honest and put it the way it is. And it's not always flattering. It's embarrassing. Like I've been through a lot of crap and it's, you know, and I'm not the richest guy in the world and I may never be. I mean, I'll do fine. I'm not complaining. My point is like, I have plenty of rich friends who in some cases might trade places with me just to have four kids who still like them or that they didn't miss their childhood. And so there's a balance to all this. And I talk about in the book, you know, one of the Seanisms, my favorite, play along the way. And, you know, and everything else is dust and putting your priorities first. And so look, and then you say, oh my gosh, really? Like you're talking about grit and surviving. And now you're talking about like maybe putting your family first. In my case, that's, you know, what matters to me. Yeah. And by the way, well, how do you do that? It's hard. It is so hard. It's not easy. And it's a daily, minute to minute, hourly endeavor to be present and then be engaged and then work in the seams and cracks and sometimes go all night. And sometimes travel heavy and sometimes not. But you are the CEO of your life. That's why they pay you the big bucks. And CEO decisions are hard. So buckle up and get used to it.
That's so true. How old are your kids? What's the range?
My kids are 15, 13, 11, and 9. Three girls and a boy is the 11-year-old.
That's awesome. Really cool. Yeah. It's I talk about in my book, I talk about my son who's a senior in college now. And, you know, what's so fun for me now is watching my kids who basically grew up and hint and grew up and, you know, walking into Target stores and pulling cases out from the back room with me. I mean, what kids, you know, do that? But how much they learned about business, about management, about leadership, and life just overall. It'll be really fun. I started really seeing a lot of that around 17, 18, which is, you know, cool. Not too far from when you started your company, right? But those things start, the dots eventually connect, right? To bring our Steve Jobs theme back in here, but it's definitely it's really fun to see that. So it's sort of another aspect of entrepreneurship that I think a lot of people don't talk about, and you know, how much your kids are benefiting actually from watching you and go through the good times and also the challenging times. And again, Richard, I mean, I think his you know, clearly his kids have seen that as well.
Yeah. I had a friend say to me the other day, who's a very wealthy friend who exited early, retired in his 40s. And it was interesting. He actually called me or texted me and said, you know, I mean, on the one hand, I really like, I wish I was just flying around in planes and surfing a lot or whatever. I'm still in the grind. On the other hand, obviously I have enough expertise around me that I don't have to do some of the, I'm not on the ladder setting up stores anymore. Like, I got past that, and I get to have more time than I did before. You know, my life has ebbed and flowed, but this friend of mine said to me, I really envy you because I realize my kids don't see me work. So here he is, super wealthy, retired, you know, and he envies me because I'm still in the grind. And so I think there's value in just, you know, listen, people were meant to work, in my opinion. And it doesn't mean you have to work forever. It doesn't mean you have to grind your life away. It doesn't mean that there aren't times in your life to do less or, you know, focus more on your family or whatever it may be. But I think that at some level, human beings are meant to work, and it's okay. And I think that it's natural and normal. And if you can not wreck your life for work, if you can find a way to do that and, you know, achieve some good things and be productive. By the way, entrepreneur, not entrepreneur, employee, it doesn't matter. There's value in that. And I think sometimes that's overlooked. I think we're all chasing like Necker Island and like, oh, I was rich enough to do that. I know a lot of people who have those things. And I still believe, I want to believe that building something at any level, being a part of something, doesn't matter if you're CEO, is valuable and useful and good.
I totally agree. My dad, long crazy story, but my dad ultimately retired in his 60s, and he was so excited. He was going to play golf every single day. Mm-hmm. And that lasted for about a week. And then what he figured out is none of his friends either didn't play golf, or they couldn't play golf because they were working. And so then he spent, I don't know, it probably took him 2 months to say, that was really stupid that I retired. And he kept saying, don't ever stop working. That doesn't mean that you have to work as hard, but always be doing something, always be thinking about, always be, you know, doing something, even if it's nonprofit work that you care about, that you feel like has impact. You don't have to be leading that charge for your whole life, but he had this big feeling about that as well, that he had made that mistake and just drilled it in all of our heads till the day that he passed away. So definitely, but
retirement was not a real thing. It was instituted by a German chancellor who wanted a chance to lead, and the older guys weren't stepping down. And so he found a way through the version of the Senate to make it mandatory. And now retirement became a thing, but there's nothing wrong with being productive, I think, until the end of your days, no matter how you choose to do that. And I like what you said, it could be less, but it doesn't have to be everything.
So if there's one message that, maybe it's one chapter or one message that you want to leave the audience with, maybe an important takeaway. Obviously, you broke this into 25 chapters, lots of different incredible lessons. But what's the one message that you want people to walk away from this interview thinking about before they go and get your book and learn a lot more about Sean and love Sack, but also, you know, just again about life, I think is what I really took away from the book.
Oh, so hard. I mean, you know, these 25 Seanisms, each one is like a little child to me, and I love to unpack them in the book and on the pod. They mean a lot to me. I'll pick one to wrap up with. This idea, it was one of those moments where I really thought, it was after the bankruptcy and we had to start over and it was embarrassing. I just won $1 million on TV and now like my company's in chapter 11. It's like the most humiliating thing in my life. And really, I probably should have left and like walked away and started something else, or I don't know. And I was asking my parents for advice, and my mom, who's sturdy and not any kind of real entrepreneur or anything like that, you know, she was a ballet teacher. But I was asking them for advice, and after hearing all my plight and all my embarrassment and what my choices were and the difficulties that were ahead through this chapter 11 rework that would take years to really work all the way through, she kind of stood up and walked away and said, "Well, you can quit or keep going." And listen, that's it. That like everything comes down to that decision. Even waking up in the morning, you can quit or you can keep going. And I made the decision to keep going, and I'm really glad I did. And I could not have known that at the time. I could not have known how it was going to work out. That uncertainty, back to embracing that uncertainty. But I could have quit. And by the way, I would still be alive and I would still hopefully have a family. I'd still be doing things. But I chose to keep going. And so I think coming to terms with the simplicity of that, quit or keep going. There is no in between.
I love that advice. It's so simple, yet it's so powerful.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks for letting me unpack these. It's been a lot of fun. And I would love, you know, I think there's a lot of value in them. I'm again taking no profit from any of it. So definitely, for those listening, check out the book. All those proceeds are donated. Really proud of that. Check out the pod, Let Me Save You 25 Years, where like geniuses like Kara get to go deep with me on these topics. And it's been a lot of fun to put all that out there.
Super fun. So, well, Sean, thanks again. And thanks everyone for listening. We'll have all the info in the show notes, and definitely pick up a copy of Let Me Save You 25 Years by Sean Nelson. So thanks again, Sean.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to The Kara Golden Show. If you would, please give us a review and feel free to share this podcast with others who would benefit. And of course, feel free to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode of our podcast. Just a reminder that I can be found on all platforms at Kara Golden. I would love to hear from you too, so feel free to DM me. And if you want to hear more about my journey, I hope you will have a listen or pick up a copy of my Wall Street Journal best-selling book, Undaunted, where I share more about my journey, including founding and building Hint. We are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Thanks for listening, and goodbye for now.